Let me put the nail in this coffin real tight. God hates a coward. God hates a coward. 21 and 8 says, but the cowardly and the unbelievers, murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire, which is the second death. God wrote that. I did. Who leads the list of that ragtag mob? The cowardly.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. I hope everybody had a enthusiastic long trial of ducking your family members, ducking friends, and trying not to say as many times as you could Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, even if you're not following or participating in these holidays. It's always annoying around this time because you really don't hear from people until the holidays come, or some people to the holidays come. It's almost like clockwork. It's the same. I get the same text from a coach and I get the same text from a cousin through marriage every single holiday season. And sometimes I don't even write back. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And I don't say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. I usually say just you two. I just feel sorry for these people because these people act as if they're NPCs. That they're just running a script, and they just, I don't get it. I don't get why this holiday spirit, any time that it's here, you hear from people that you never hear from. They never check on you and say, hey, how you doing? Hey, this is where I'm at. How's things going? Is you never hear from them. But only when you get to the holidays, that's when you start hearing from people. I find that weird. I guess that's the whole brainwashing and mind control that people don't think they're under, or the prison that they're in the confines of their minds. But it has been an eventful 2 weeks, and it always is because of Christmas and its origins in Babylon and Nimrod. And then we go into the New Year's, and that's more of a Roman Greek thing, although Babylonians have also participated in New Year's Day celebrations. But the thing that's different with them is they did it by sowing crop. That was like kind of their New Year's thing, was sowing crop. So that's why most have, or these mystery religions have moved the date. It was March 1st, which is spring for us, which is when we start sowing the ground, and in the summertime, you know, whatever we sow produces in the field around summertime, right after winter. Now, because it's America, now everybody switches everything to March 1st, and even some Israelites are now convinced that New Year's is during March, or the spring equinox is really the new year for Hebrews, which we didn't even go through that. We didn't go through any celebration and say that we had to celebrate a year in scripture. But Israelites think that's what we're supposed to be doing, that we're supposed to be saying Happy New Year to each other because it's a Hebrew New Year. And that's not correct either, because as I stated before, because I know that the land is in South Africa, and I posted a video on my Sight to the Blind Instagram page about a video talking about that South Africa's seasons are completely ahead or reversed from American seasons. They're last. South Africa is first. So South Africa is 6 months ahead of American seasons. So in March or in springtime, it's actually in wintertime for us. That's why my entire calendar is based off Africa seasons. And of course, there's going to be a hit and miss here and there, but I'm still trying to miss as small as I can. Some people don't care if they're missing big. I'd rather miss as small as I can and be as close to the land, as close to Jah as I can get it. So that's why I'm not doing Friday, Saturday, Shabbats. That's why I'm not organizing my calendar based on the spring equinoxes or the quote-unquote seven-day creation theory or creation story, which that's not in scripture either. So this is why I'm finding it out myself. I've had to change. I've been wrong. I changed a couple of months because I didn't know if I was behind or forward, because I'm trying to match it up. All I'm doing is laying the calendar in my mind over top of what I believe is the true calendar. And I'm just working from there. And then I ask the Most High, show me what month are we in? And usually he tells me. My mind would go into, let's say, chapter. If it was like the seventh month, I would read something in chapter seven or something that confirms that I'm on the right month by the symbolisms that he's shown me, because he knows I'm good at discerning symbolism. So the way Yah will communicate with me will be completely different how he communicates with you, but he will do it in a way where you could only understand it and you understand it only. So during this time, you know, it's a lot of sacrifices that happen. It's been three planes that crashed in the last week. And the two that crashed, one being the Russian plane that they said went down because of a bird strike. But then when people went back to see it, they saw bullet holes all riddled through the tail of the plane. So, and then they changed their story, said it wasn't a bird strike. It was in fact brought down by Russia. And there was a guy, I don't know how real it is, because there was a guy who was filming the entire plane going down. And then he happened to be the guy who survived this plane crash. So whatever. So the couple of days after that, the Korean airplane crash. Now, they said the brick wall that it ran into wasn't supposed to be built or wasn't supposed to be there, which is what is odd to me, because why this makeshift wall was at the end of an airport, I mean, at the end of a airplane landing spot. It made no sense. But when they just show you the plane, it's already skidding as if it didn't get its landing gear out or deployed. And did you see it scoot all the way down and just blow up? Now, when it blows up, you don't see no people. You don't see no seats. You don't see nothing. You just see a plane just smash into this wall and blow up. You're not seeing nobody strung on the ground or nothing. And then two people survived. They don't say who these two people are. You just see the very next day press conferences of so-called or would-be family members that are upset. And then you find out it's a Boeing jet. Then you find out Boeing, you know, had a issue with a whistleblower or two whistleblowers, and they killed him. So it's something going on with Boeing. And but then we go back to that movie, Leave the World Behind, and what was shown? It was shown people dying in plane crashes. And one of those scenes, which I don't think people noticed, was a woman sitting in an airplane seat. Once it crashed, she was just sitting there. And the black actor that was in the movie, when he was walking away from the crash, her head was following him. Go back and watch that movie and look at the plane crash, and there's a plane seat that's sitting on the ground out in the open, and there's like one survivor, and she's alive. She's not saying anything. She just follows the black actor to where he goes until she's off screen. But as they predict the program, they said that this was going to happen. And there's been many plane crashes before then. I mean, Florida at one point had a plane crash every 2 or 3 weeks for like the last 3 or 4 months, I think. Just random crashes, like civilian operated crashes. They even landed in the street, or they ran into a building, or ran into a house, or ran into some power lines. Just random stuff. But like I said, this all builds up to you, are programmed with destruction, to you are programmed with another 9/11. And that's all it is. I ran the numbers to the whole Korean plane crash, and it points to 9/11. Mind you, we don't think it's even with planes. They just leveled the building with explosives and then blew out that one part. We think that a plane crashed, they blew out that part because that's where the explosive was put by this Israeli arts team. A couple of months before 9/11 actually happened. And then they actually had the lights on the side of the building where the plane supposedly crashed into. They had lights, you know, showing that it was, I think it was like G Team or something, B Team or G Team or something like that. I think it was Gelatin or something. G Team was the arts company. And when they were putting the art installation and it was leveling it up with bombs and explosives, and it blew out the same way we saw on TV on 9/11. So I don't think anybody was in that whole Korean car plane crash. I mean, plane crash. I don't believe so. And then a migrant, an immigrant, set some woman on fire. They said it's 61-year-old, then it changed to 57-year-old. So already they can't keep their life straight. And if you saw this video, this woman or this mannequin or whatever they had standing in for this person were just standing still. What person you know engulfed in flames just stand still? Unless they were like a Buddha and they were performing some type of sacrifice on themselves to stop war, which we've seen that happen before. But somebody just from New Jersey, an old woman being set on fire and just standing there being engulfed in flames don't make sense. And then her name was like Debrina Kawam. Another made up name. Debrina. So, of course, I ran that name and the name comes back with 33. The migrant who did it, his age was 33. So it's just silliness. There's silly sacrifices all around. And this is what they do around this time. They love to do this. From the month of October to like the end of January, it'll pop. These before spring equinox sacrifices is what they love. And then they'll come back again. And they'll get hot again, May, June, July, and August for their summer solstice sacrifices. But people think this is normal. Like, oh, it's normal for people to set people on fire in subways. Or it's normal for people to get pushed in front of trains. It's normal for planes to crash. Now, we move on to Germany, where a Saudi man drives through a Christmas parade. Again, Christmas parade. Killing 5 and injuring 200. A Saudi doctor. Don't say why he did it. We ain't seen no manifesto. We don't see no social media post revelings and ramblings. But we know this man drove his truck through a Christmas parade. Mirroring the guy who did it in Wisconsin in 2021. Now we got another one. A New Orleans man runs a truck down Bourbon Street. FBI saying it's not a terrorist attack. Media saying it's a terroristic attack. And we're 39 days away from Super Bowl. The Sugar Bowl is today in New Orleans. They're saying people to not go on Bourbon Street or Canal. And of course, an incident happened on Bourbon Street. So I got to do my due diligence with numerology and look up Bourbon. And Bourbon is 33. And if I wanted to go further and look up Bourbon Street, abbreviated, it'll get me to another 33. This is what they did. I mean, it's comical because they don't change. They don't change the programming. If they're going to have somebody run into a crowd, they might as well have 4 or 5 standby dummies to run into the crowd. Since people are not understanding that these things are connected, that somehow they all are just random events that people are piggybacking off each other. But one of the things that caught my attention now is when they come to this era of time, when it comes to New Year's, I've heard the word revelings, revelry. And they're starting to use it more and more. I've heard it on 3 separate stations right now. This morning I heard it, last night I heard it from a guy who was on location in New York talking about New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and he mentioned revelers. Then the woman here on MSNBC or whatever it was, she said, oh, revelers. And then I looked in the story about the New Orleans so-called, quote-unquote, terroristic attack. They say revelers. We're having a good time partying and finding joy in the new year. So now, of course, I go to Enoch 67, verse 12. Judgment has come upon them. because they trusted in their carnal revelry and denied Yahuwah Sabaoth. People do not know or understand, especially those who say they are so-called believers in the word, that if you celebrate New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, you are in fact choosing to worship idolatry, and idolatry out of Rome, which is Edom, which is Idumea, and Greece. You chose to worship in Babylonian mystery schools. You chose that. And people are trying to rationalize, like, oh, it's doesn't mean anything. It's not, you know, it's not sinful to give thanks to the new year. Anything that's not in scriptures is almost dangerous to celebrate or dangerous to be partaking in. Because the Most High has said many times, and even his prophets have said, that he has no respect of persons. He does not care who you are, what your rationale is. He does not care. He only cares about if you are being obedient, loyal, fruitful in the word, and handling your business. That's all he cares about. Galatians 5, 19 through 22. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, sedition, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings. Here we go. Revelings and such like, of which I tell you before, as I've had also told you in time past, that which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of Elohim. But the fruit of the Ruach is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, and so forth. Revelings. Partying. Being in places with loud noise, where there's an act of riot or excessive drinking of wine. This is what causing people to produce a stumbling block in front of themselves. Because it's not only just about reveling, it's also about the attitude. It's also about the unclean walk that dwells in certain places. It's always about the flesh. And the flesh can be ever so changing, and the flesh can never be quenched. It's always wanting more. Once you get a hit of that, whatever your vice is in your flesh, you want more of it. And if you do not keep yourself in check, your flesh will overrule you. It's a constant purging. It ain't just, I just study the word and I pray and that's it. It's a constant purging of yourself. When Yahushua talks about once we die to this world, once we are baptized, we are dead to this world and we become a new creature. Every day is we are becoming a new creature. We cannot go back to who we are or who we were. There is a reason why most of us are here in this community, is because we have given up our ability to govern ourselves, because we have not worked in anything that produced any righteous fruit in our previous works. We may fool ourselves and say that, oh, I was fine a couple of months ago. Oh, I was doing this 4 or 5 years ago, and this is why I am the way I am. We could say that. But it always going to come to a wall when it's time to grow and transform into a new creature because of the word. When it comes to that purging, it's serious. It depends on how much you need to purge. Now, the Most High treats everybody different. But for me, he had to purge me on a severe level. I'm talking about he had to humble me severely. And I always tell this story that when, at some point, my money was running low. I had to find a job. But I haven't even been in the workforce since I was almost in my teenage years. When I worked retail, and then I worked construction, pulling lights through the Beaver Stadium in Penn State. And that's really the only, like, thing, really work that I've ever did in my youth. Other than that, it was just football. So for the life of me, I don't know why, but I thought that me getting, you know, job interviews for companies was like a thing. Like I was like, oh, I'm gonna get back in the game. I'm gonna be a businessman. I'm gonna come home, you know, to wife and kids and with my suitcase in hand. Nope. Because all those opportunities that I went through, or the Most High put me through, were like pyramid scheme companies where like people who didn't have no education, I'm talking about college, no master's, no nothing, having an interview with me and then have me go do like get on the street and then go door to door and ask for businesses to get donate money, or if they want a service from my company to do a particular thing. And I am not a talkative person. I am not a extrovert. I do not like, you know, being put on a pedestal. I mean, not pedestal, but being put on a platform where I have to actually talk to a group of people. I suck at that. I struggle with that. I do not want to do that. But the Most High put me through, I think, 3 pyramid scheme companies. And I quit. I didn't even call back. Once they gave me, like, oh, we love your resume. You know, we should come work for us. And I was like, this is a pyramid scheme. This is not going to be doing nothing. I would have to sell stuff in order for me to get commission and in order for me to get a check. And I am not good at selling. I'm not a seller. So I quit all those jobs until I found one that I thought was good. And of course, I was fooled by that one. So the Most I was like, nah, you're going to do something. You're not going to just keep quitting. I'm going to make you do one of these things. So one of the things he made me do with this pyramid scheme was to sell boosted makeup, boosted women's makeup. And I found out it was boosted when I looked up the guy who was the boss of this whole operation. He had gotten in trouble in Jersey for boosting supplies or boosting makeup and products from other companies. And I think he did a couple of months or days in jail, but he didn't give up his partner or something like that. And now he fled to Miami. I didn't know this until after I was going through this process. So then I found out later. I was on the job for like maybe 2 or 3 days. I was on the job. I was in a 3-piece suit. I'm talking about the vest and all, a gray 3-piece suit in the middle of the summer in Miami, 80 degrees outside, walking around with 4 or 5 boxes of women's makeup, going to women, going to mothers and daughters alike. And it was like, yeah, this is the new hot stuff is out right now. Come get this makeup. And I sound exactly how I'm telling you. That's exactly how I was saying it to them. Yeah, get this hot makeup right now. You ain't gonna never find this makeup in stores. You're not gonna find it in Ulta or Sephora. This is a good deal for you. And then I had to come with a partner to watch her, because obviously he didn't have a car, so I'd be the one to drive. So I'm selling makeup in this hot ass heat, embarrassing myself. But I did it for 2 or 3 days. And then after that, I got a job helping out kids with this company called Motivational Edge. And that kind of smoothed me over. So the Most High was bringing me from the bottom up to the top. So he had me start where I would be humbled. He had me at entry level humbling. And then I went through that process, and then I found a job, which I like being around kids because I'm good around children, because I, you know, obviously I get it from my father because he coaches, and he's been coaching since I was 8 or 9 years old. And he's always been my coach up until college. So I'm good with sports and kids. So I did that for a time period. I think I'm going to say 2 or 3 years until I got to my awakening. And then the Most High said, all right, what do you want to do? And I asked the Most High, I don't know nothing. I'm stupid. I don't know what I need to know. I want you to tell me what I need to know. And that's when he started hitting me with all visions and dreams of what I must do. And that's what landed me here. He gave me a really good vision about me battling demons with the sword of truth. And I know when it's the Most High, because in his dreams, everything is shiny and glimmering. If it's not shiny and glimmery, it's very, very calm, and it's very, very visible and lucid and vivid. And I can tell what messages he's trying to convey to me. And like I said before, because he knows I'm good at discerning symbolism, he also puts it in a way that I can understand the symbolism that he's telling me through visions and dreams. So then he had me go through a vision where I was sitting on a swing and I was being dunked in the water. I was going in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And he kept doing it over and over until I woke up. And I understood that is that I was still being halfway with him. I was still in the world, or I was still in the flesh and trying to be in a rook at the same time. And what I mean by that, I was smoking too much weed. I was still doing ecstasy. I was doing that and praying at the same time. I don't know why, but that's where my mind was going. It was going, it was in between two worlds. So he was telling me, you better stop. So after that part, I kind of slowed down my mentality with that. And my ruach started to drive a little bit more than my flesh. And that is why the transformation is what it is. And it's, I can't even go back to it if I wanted to. Like, it's, you know it. Once you close that door in your old life, it is hard to go back to that door. You couldn't even find the doorknob to that door, even if you tried. No matter how frustrated you are in your personal life, no matter what goes on, what chaotic moments happen to you, either through illness or whatever, your natural response would be, after being good for so long, is to like, why do this? If I'm being good, why am I being treated this way? And your first inclination is to turn back to find that doorknob to that door of your old life so you can self-soothe yourself. And I'm telling you, it's going to be hard to do. It's going to be very difficult for you to do. You have to actively find that. When they talk about backsliding isn't just, oh, you made a mistake in like in a day and then you repented. No, backslide, you make a continuous effort to search and seek out old pleasures to make you feel good. And then once your system is purged from old habits, that is when the fear of the Most High dwells within your ruach. Because some of us never had that fear before. When we did what we wanted, acted how we wanted, there was no fear. The times I was arrested and times I was getting arrested on South Beach, I was at a point in my life I was laughing when I was getting arrested because I thought it was funny after a while. I told my parents one time, don't even bail me out. Leave me in there. That's how gone I was. Not just spiritually, but in my flesh, that's how gone I was. That I was so, even though I had at the time she was maybe 5 or 6. My daughter was 5 or 6. I was literally was going to be okay with being in jail. That's where I wanted to be. That was my low point. I pleaded with my parents, do not bail me out. Leave me in there. But then I don't see the future as Yah sees my future. So obviously he saved me for a purpose. But it all comes to purging yourself in a way that you lose touch of who you used to be. So these people don't never get to have that chance. They won't ever get that chance because they're dead in the street. And it was a horrible scene. Dead in the street because they chose to revel. They chose the works of their flesh. And I don't think people know how serious it is because they say, well, it's not me. I wasn't there. But judgment will call and come to anybody it feels that is worthy, or when they feel it's due time for your judgment to happen. And of course, in this story, this man supposedly has pipe bombs or explosives. And there was a guy in Virginia who was arrested for pipe bombs and explosives found and his assassination plot against Biden. Which don't make sense to me either, because Biden's already on his way out. Why would you want to assassinate a president whose term is literally days away from ending? But they do this to push domestic terrorism. They do this to get ready for the civil war. They just need to bring it all together. Right now, they're laying down the pieces. They're giving you the ABCs, 1, 2, 3s before they start to actually roll out. So they're not doing it through cartoons and movies like they used to when they did it for 9/11. Now they have the ability to just brainwash people to accept that all these random events are somehow random, that they're not connected when they're actually connected. All you need right now is somebody from a terroristic country to pop up over here to do the same exact thing, which either run over somebody with a truck or plant explosives in a building. you would see it as, oh, we knew this was coming. And that's why they do it. That's why they predict the programmers. So we could say, oh, we knew this was coming. So you're not as shocked. If they didn't do what they did in 9/11 as far as movies, music, album covers, TV shows, cartoons, we would really be dumbfounded. We would know that this would never happen. This should have never happened. And we would dive into the truth of the matter. But because we were brainwashed and predicted programmed with all this media and propaganda, we kind of like, we knew this was going to happen. I mean, it happened before when they ran a truck down into the basement of, or into the garage of the World Trade and tried to blow it up through a van, and it didn't work. So it's like, it's common knowledge that it would be attacked. To go to 1 Peter chapter 4, for as much then as Mashiach has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Suffering in the flesh means whatever you react to in your flesh, it has the ability to control you, manipulate you, or humble you, or embarrass you. And anger being one of those things, frustration being one of those things, and of course, all the things that Afro mentioned in Galatians 5 are the works of the flesh. And if you don't put a dog collar around these attributes of the flesh, they will run you or overrule you, and it will always come up in a place where you should be pushing forward. Or you should be going into a period of joy or peace. This is usually when they come up. This is what demons do. They look for strife. They need to feed. If they cannot eat food, human food, and if it says in Enoch that they are always thirsty, parched, that means they are always pissed off. And the only way that they can absorb anything is through your energy. When you are upset, when you are angry, when you feel a certain way. I saw a meme that said, demons pay attention to your reactions. So we don't see the world beyond this veil. For all you know, you could be having a demon staring dead in your face. You would never know it. But through either your joy, your happiness, or through your sadness or anger, they stand right by to absorb that energy. They sit there and wait because they know when you're going to pop off. And especially if they know your bloodline better than you know your bloodline, they're going to sit there and know exactly what time to pounce. They know exactly when you are going to either misstep, transgress, or go backwards. They feel it. Imagine you getting ready to go to a bar and they know that you struggle with alcoholism. That means prior to something happened into your life, either you broke up with your girl, you broke up with your guy, or you had an argument with a friend. They like, okay, this person knows that as soon as they go through this type of experience, they're going to go run to the bar or they're going to run to drugs. So they just sit and wait. And because more and more need to feed off your energy, he go call 7 or 8 more, just as wicked as him, to either enter your house, into your mind, or into your flesh. Because they know you more than you know you. They know your bloodline more than you know your bloodline. They know your ancestors way better than you know your ancestors. This is the whole thing with generational curses. This is the whole thing with traits that be handed down through your bloodline. So the whole thing of the Most High saying that he will not pardon the children or the father to the fourth and fifth generation of the children of them that not only hate them, but just part of judgment, that's strong. That means the Most High knows that these unclean ruachs bind themselves to bloodlines that they know is susceptible to certain, you know, wickedness of the flesh, or certain works of the flesh, I should say. that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of Elohim. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the other nations, when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excessive wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead? For unto this purpose was the Besorah preached also to them that are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but living according to Elohim and the Ruach. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. Watch. And that's what we're doing. We're watching. Not only watching the world, not only watching what's happening in our own worlds, but also watching ourselves. Putting a chokehold on our flesh. Putting a chokehold on our responses and reactions to the flesh. Which for some, I would say it's difficult to do because you haven't read enough of the word and you haven't purge yourself in a way that you have to scrape the bottom of yourself to get to why you react the way you react, you are the way you are, and you handle situations the way you handle them. How many of you have actually scraped the bottom of yourself? I'm talking about with a spoon. I ain't talking about a knife or a tool that you know is going to easily work. I'm talking about with a dull spoon, scraped the inside of yourself out, so that you could find the truth or see the truth or adhere to the truth without any contradiction in your following of the word. And it's not going to be pretty. It ain't supposed to be pretty. It's supposed to be ugly. It's supposed to be embarrassing. It's supposed to be shameful. It's supposed to not produce joy once you go through it. It may not even produce joy until, I would say, 4 or 5 months later, until you actually got a handle on who you are as a person. But is it worth it? Yes, it is worth it. Because after time goes by, and it's not a long time, after time goes by, you no longer treat your traumas or the dramatic experiences the same way once you come over that hill or come over that mountain. You don't. I look back at the things that I've done. I laugh. I'm obviously they're not funny, but I laugh because I understand why I did the things that I did, why I reacted the way I reacted, why I wasn't controllable, why I was disobedient, why I didn't pay attention to my parents, why did I get into the things that I got into when as a young age, all of that. It's almost like a constant conversation with yourself. Like, do you remember what you used to do? And I would catch these moments like walking through Publix or going to Home Depot or just out on the beach somewhere, that these moments and these moods would hit me out of nowhere. But yeah, you remember what you used to do? Do you remember that you did this, this, and this with this person? Do you remember like the things you said to this person? Like, all that replays. I was like, yeah, I did that. I can't believe I did that, but I know why I did that. I was living on a having your cake and eat it too vibe. But once you understand, and once it doesn't become a taboo for you or an enticement to you and you laugh at it, then you don't want to go back to that embarrassment. Then you stop wanting to go back to that shame. Then you move forward. Then you know you are a new creature. And Yahushua, then you know you are a new creature in the word. There is nothing left to go back to because you purged yourself from all iniquities, all reactions and emotions that kept you yoked and bound to a person that's not yourself, or the person that you are not, or the person that you're not supposed to be. That's how powerful the word is. that the more the word is in you, the more or the less you have the ability to go back to the things that are your traditional self-soothing vices. And like I said before, the demons know who your vices are. The demons know what your vices are, and they know exactly where you like to go. They know exactly who you like to be with, and they know exactly what you're going to do before you even do it, because they watch your reactions to certain things that happen in your life. It's up to us not to give them such power. 8 through 10. And above all things, have fervent love among yourselves, for love shall cover the multitude of sins. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. As every man has received the gift, even so minister the same one to another, as good stewards of the manifold of grace of Elohim. That in itself is the humbling. Humbling in the Ruach, because it's very hard to humble the flesh. Humbling the Ruach causes you to have a whole conversation with yourself. Look at yourself. Think of yourself. Being humbled and shamed in the flesh, it makes you turn to vices. It makes you turn to your old ways. It makes you seek out other vices. It makes you seek out other self-soothing methods. But humbling in the Ruach will get you to reform, transform, and know that we are the way we are because our ways were not right in the beginning. We are the way we are, and we're leaving a path that is not desirous of us in order for us to be a new creature. If we're trying to be transformed or transfigured, as is mentioned in scripture multiple times, that it says we would run with sparks, that we'd be able to transform ourselves and whatever we so desire, that we'll be made like the angels, holy. If we understand that this is the goal, this is the end result, that means the flesh of this world, the flesh of our skin, will not be able to be taken with us. We must leave it behind. And the more we leave it behind, the more we don't become shamefaced and shameful and embarrassed for the things that we have done. This is the whole meaning of New Year's to them. The god Janus, the two-faced, going from the old into the new. That's why so many people talk about New Year, New Me, and just be the same old person, because they have not gotten over themselves last year. They have not produced any fruit last year. They never purged themselves from years and years and years and years of sin, idolatry, wickedness, and witchcraft. They're taking their old selves into the new. But they, like I said before, in the flesh, they think that they're changing and becoming a better person. And that's why it only lasts for a good 2 or 3 weeks. That's why gyms are filled up for the first month. And then they go right back to being dead. That's the works of the flesh. It'll never carry. It'll never do the work that it's intended to do for your Ruach. I think Paul said in scripture that exercising is good, but it's not better than exercising the Ruach. Found it. It's in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, or verse 8. For bodily exercise profits little, but righteousness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that is now and of that which is to come. Righteousness, being holy, has nothing to do with the flesh. We must, as hard it is sometimes to walk in the Ruach, because we do get persuaded to walk in the flesh, Walking in the walk is what's going to produce fruit, and was what's going to produce righteousness, grace, love, long-suffering, mercy, all attributes of the Ruach that allow us to continue in the Word and to continue purging ourselves from our old ways. I'll see y'all next week.